Our reading is from Kelly Curran. Don't be afraid of high hopes or plans that seem to be out of reach. Life is meant to be experienced, and every situation allows for learning and growth. Motivation is a positive starting point, and action places you on a forward path. A dream is a blueprint of a goal not yet achieved. The only difference between the two is the effort involved in obtaining what you hope to accomplish. Let your mind and heart urge you on. Allow the power of your will to lead you to your destination. Don't count the steps ahead. Just add up the total steps already covered and multiply it by faith, confidence, and endurance. Always remember that for those who persist, today's dreams are transformed into tomorrow's successes. This past week, I just happened to catch a little segment on national television about a restaurant in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Perhaps some of you saw it too. The restaurant is called Tim's Place, and it claims to be the world's friendliest restaurant. It is a very successful business. If you take a look at its website, or if you happen to be in Albuquerque and see the sign that hangs out in front, you will see that it says they are now serving breakfast, lunch, and hugs. Now that alone might draw you into visiting or at least learning more about this place. But there is something else more extraordinary about Tim's Place, and that is Tim. Tim is the owner of the restaurant, and I think the principal hugger. And you see, he had worked at a lot of restaurants before getting his own. He has had some help from his family and friends, and has a good manager and dedicated employees working with him. But this is Tim's venture, and he works hard at it. But Tim is not the kind of person you might expect to be running a place like this. In fact, you would not expect Tim to be successful at all. Tim was born in 1986 with Down syndrome, but he and his family never let that be a reason for low expectations. Tim has a favorite quote that he shares with people. It's from Walt Disney. It reads, "If you can dream it, you can do it." And Tim and his family have lived that philosophy, always aiming high, even when the voice of naysayers were proclaiming that a person with Downs can't do this or that. It wasn't easy, and Tim does not have all the abilities that most of us have. If you meet him, you will know he has Downs. As is the case with many folks with Downs, some words are difficult for him to say. But you will also see a loving man with a determination that few of us can say that we have. By setting his sights high, even higher than some people might think reasonable, he has accomplished so much more than what most people would have expected of him. Tim graduated from high school. He was voted Student of the Year by the faculty and the administration, and voted Homecoming King by the students, by the way, with the largest margin of votes ever in the school's history. But he didn't stop there. He kept aiming high, and with the encouragement and support of his parents and his friends, he did what few kids with Down syndrome do. He went to Eastern New Mexico University. He lived on his own in the dorm, and he graduated with a certificate in food services and office skills. He worked at numerous restaurants, and he had a wonderful way with customers. And he and his family dreamed of him having his own place, Tim's Place. And now he does. And like Walt Disney said, if you can dream it, you can do it. And every day, 7 days a week, Tim, with the help of a fiercely loyal staff, is there serving not just good food, but good hugs to his customers. And everyone leaves Tim's not just with their stomachs full, but with their hearts full and with a sense that we all can do more than we might think we can if we set our expectations high enough. Tim's life would be very different if he and his family had set their expectations for him too low. Tim's story strikes close to home for me. You see, I have a little niece named Nicole, my godchild. She is 4 years old. And like Tim, she was born with Down syndrome. I remember so clearly being at the hospital when she was born. It was not immediately obvious that she had Downs, but she had some physical problems and tests were done. And I remember the doctor coming in with the genetic test results. And I remember the horrible feeling as it seemed that all the dreams we had for this newborn child were just gone in that moment. Nicole had a tough start to life. She had a colostomy when she was 1 day old, and she spent the first couple of months of her life in neonatal intensive care. The doctors were kind, but as doctors have to do, they tried to give honest answers. It was not clear that her bowels would ever work properly. She might need a colostomy forever. It was not clear if she would be able to talk. It was not clear if she would be able to walk normally. Our expectations for her were pretty low in the early days of her life. But things soon started to change. She came home, and a wonderful early intervention team got to work. They were far more optimistic about her future. At 6 months, her colostomy was removed and her digestive system reconnected. And even though on her first birthday she weighed only 11 pounds and was in the failure to thrive category of child development, our expectations for her were getting higher. Soon it was clear that we should not sell her short, that we should raise our expectations for her. All kinds of early intervention continued, and she loved it. Before she was 3 years old, she was not only getting on a school bus every day to go to speech classes, but she was talking. She loved the bus, and so soon she was singing all the verses of the wheels on the bus go round and round, and so were we, because to hear her speaking those words and singing those words and to be able to do that with her was such a joy. She still goes to special classes for part of every day, but then joins non-down kids her age in daycare, and she's really able to keep up with them. She's now chunky and active and full of love. In fact, it often becomes a problem, especially with some of the boys her age, because she does not want to leave school, in fact, often refuses to, until she has kissed every one of them goodbye. Her speech isn't perfect. She still gets some of her colors wrong, but she is motivated to be the best she can be, and everyone around her is motivated to help make that happen. Like that little train, we found ourselves first saying, I think maybe she can do this or that, and later coming to say, I know she can do a lot more things than we ever dreamed at first she could. When I think back about our initial low expectations for this child, thinking that she would never do this or that, I realized that had we not seen the light and set our expectations higher, she would not be anywhere near where she is today. I fully expect her to be another kid. The point is that for all of us, our expectations of ourselves, for our children, and for our community have a truly profound effect on how things turn out. We may not always reach our goal, but we will be so much closer to where we need to be than if we don't set our expectations high. I know you've heard the advice before, shoot for the moon, even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. The consequences of not doing that, of aiming too low, are real. I've got to say that this must be my week for using my family as sermon fodder. Sometimes my family and friends will say something to me and then add, and don't put that in a sermon. So I hope I'm not overstepping any boundaries here, but I want to tell you one more story about a family member. It's my brother's story. So if you happen to meet him, maybe you could just avoid telling him that he was in the servant. For as long as I can remember, my brother was the great animal lover. Every wounded bird, frog, rabbit, squirrel was brought home to be nursed back to health. We actually had hospital cages in our backyard for just such a purpose. Most of them didn't make it, and we would have to have a funeral. Often I would get to officiate, so I guess there was an omen of things to come there for me as well. But surprisingly, some of those little creatures that had fallen from trees or been hit by cars did recover thanks to his care. Even in his early childhood, it was clear that my brother wanted to be a vet. But in high school, he developed a chronic medical condition. And in college, he decided that with that condition, trying to do all that was needed to do to get into veterinary school was too much. So instead, he went into the tech world of computers, and he got a good job, and he was not happy. He worked at it for some time, but then he gave it up to take a lower-paying job at Tufts Vet School as a vet tech. And he went back to school to take all those other science courses that he needed to take before he could apply to vet school. And then after several applications, he finally got into vet school. And now he's, for many years, has been a vet. And he works much harder than he ever did before. And he still has health challenges, but he's so much happier. I know he would tell you that for many practical reasons, he had set the expectations of himself too low. And as a result, he was unsatisfied with his life. And he's in a very different place now today. I don't think we can overestimate just how important aiming high is in our personal lives. I don't think there's anything sadder than to get to the end of your life and feel you've not even tried to be all that you could be. Sure, we can regret our failures to reach a goal, and we all have them. But I think we regret far more our failures to at least try to live our dreams. I don't want to come to the end of my life feeling like I've sold myself short. In that beautiful anthem that the choir sang, Robert Frost advises us to live our lives choosing something like a star to set our minds on. He stayed. I hear aiming high every time that O star comes through. With the Sopranos. I hear him saying, set your sights on a higher and more worthy goal, even where there's some uncertainty, obscurity, or clouds. Saying, even where there are naysayers advising you against it, let it be your guide, be your steadfast pursuit. Now, of course, there is a place for practical decision-making, but remember that we are so often capable of much more than we think. Aiming high is important in our lives. It is important to encourage it in the lives of our children and our grandchildren and our nieces and nephews. And it's also important that we aim high as a community together. I believe that together, as a church, we should never just be satisfied with good enough, but aim to be the best church that we can be. As we approach next Friday's vote on a capital campaign, a campaign that we have been working on and researching the feasibility of for years, I think it's important that we remember the importance of aiming high. There is a lot that really needs to be done here and done correctly, so we don't want to set our sights too low. If we do, we'll be unsatisfied with the results. Some of you have told me that they thought maybe in the past we've set our sights too low and didn't go as far as we should. Some other projects, and I can see that point. But you know, when I really look at the long view of this church, the long history of it, I have to tell you, I am so impressed at how many times it has aimed high and made or at least come very close to the goal it set. I marvel at this building. I am amazed that this building is even here. And let me tell you why. In 1847, there was a beautiful, much more elegant, bigger meeting house right here on this site. It had been built in 1822, and then it was built with the tax dollars of the entire community. Even the minister's salary back then was paid from the public coffers. There was no separation of church and state in Massachusetts until 1833. So that next year, 1834, began a difficult time for the church, as the town was no longer picking up the bills, and they had to make it on their own. In the 1830s and 40s, there were times when they didn't have funds to pay the minister. They had to rent out the building to get money, and they even had to sell some land to pay their expenses. But by the late 1840s, they were stabilizing. And then, at 9 a.m., on November 9, 1847, the unthinkable happened. The church was reported to be on fire, and by 11 a.m., it was completely destroyed, with the exception of just a few things. Some books, that clock, the communion service, and the pulpit. The prize Paul Revere Bell fell to the ground and cracked. The congregation had to start over. And just think of it. For the first time, they had to raise all the money to replace the building that had been built for them by tax dollars. Well, a subscription paper was circulated just out in the town to underwrite the cost of the new structure at $50 a share. That, by the way, would be about $1,500 a share today. Pews were sold to members. You can still see the price of each of the pews. Afterwards, if you want to pick up the pew cushion, you'll see it marked underneath. And if memory serves me right, the price was from about $40 to $150. That's about $1,400 to $5,000 in today's money. And then there were some large gifts. They pieced together whatever they could, and they just began to build. I'm sure they were scraping together the money all through the construction process. But they had a dream of a church that was fitting for their community and for the worship of God. They built it in the beautiful style of Christopher Wren, with fluted columns in the front and a 100-foot steeple on top. The bell was recast and returned to its original position of prominence. But the inside of the building is simpler, and the building is smaller than the last meeting house. And I've often wondered if maybe they didn't quite make their goal. And let me tell you why. Look at the windows on each side of the church. Notice that the space between them is not the same, yet everything else in this room is perfectly symmetrical. I am guessing that there was to be a fourth window on each side, paired with that one over here. Over there. Look, imagine you see all then be symmetrical. Perhaps funds were running low, and they just decided to end the building here. That's how they built buildings back then. It wasn't on some grand plan. It just kept going. Nonetheless, they ended up with a magnificent meeting house. They aimed incredibly high. They shot for the moon, and I'm not sure they got all that they wanted. I'm not sure they got to the moon, but they certainly landed among the stars. And had they not aimed high, in spite of what the naysayers were probably saying, we would not have this beautiful building. They must have had great faith and persistence to get this job done. I find it truly amazing that our forebears could come together and do this. And I think about those members of FPC back then, and I think about us now, and those words from Kelly Caron that I shared with you earlier ring so true. Don't count the steps ahead. Just add up the total steps already covered. Multiply it by faith, confidence, and assurance. And always remember, for those who persist, today's dreams are transformed into tomorrow's successes. That's the sentiment that I hold for Tim and Nicole and for this church community. Whether we're talking about the approach of a single individual to his or her life or the collective approach of a church community to their future, aiming high is essential. It is only by aiming high that we discover all of which we are capable. We all have more resources than we sometimes believe. This is an incredibly exciting time in the life of this church. We have had a question before us for some time now. Can we do what needs to be done? We've all gone along for a while like that little train saying, I think we can, I think we can, I think we can. But when I look at all that's happening here in this church now, and I feel the spirit, the confidence, and the endurance that has existed here for centuries, I know we can do all that needs to be done. Something inside me says, just do it. Find a way and do it. We may not know all the details of how it'll happen, but we know we'll get there. Have courage, aim high, and do what the Spirit says.